Love this podcast? Consider supporting this show. You decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Visit the link in the episode description to support now.
Welcome to the Mixtape Lounge. Please welcome your host, Greg Howard Jr.
Didn't think we'd let it run into a shit cliche. You should roll the credits. If you've got no lines left to say, and I'll be in the blue light of that empty parking lot. Got the script right, but I lost the fucking plot. What am I for?
Her song Quarter Life Crisis is out right now for your listening pleasure. Please welcome the absolutely fantastic Ryan Wright to the show. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So for the listeners who may not be familiar with your music, what can they expect from Ryan Wright?
Oh, man. I'm a drama queen a little bit. I kind of it's very angsty. It's very sad in some songs, some parts of the new EP. This new EP specifically is kind of all about just being a pessimist and a negative Nancy and like dealing with being a 21-year-old girl who lives at home and is a musician and doesn't do the whole college thing and like kind of trying to navigate that. So it's just about, you know, figuring life out. Yeah.
So with Quarter Life Crisis, it's very, like, there's a very like 90s grunge vibe to it. Did you intend to do that, or is that just how it kind of came out?
Oh yeah. So, I've been kind of meaning to go in the more punkier, grungier. Well, I guess the specific term for what my genre is called bubble grunge, which is like bubblegum pop meets grunge. And I was trying to, I mean, I work, my producer is my dad, and he's had many bands throughout the years, one band in the 90s. So he's got like a lot of that, you know, musical knowledge on how to like make it sound that way. And I wrote it with him and my friend Ben, who's a year older than me. And so we were kind of feeling all these conflicting feelings and like kind of feeling out our quarter life crisis and writing it. And he's very like very into the 90s chords and wanted it to sound a little bit more punky, so we kind of we went into that grungier, more angry direction. But yeah.
I love it. It's very much, if Quarter Life Crisis for me is if like Shirley Manson and the Cranberries had a baby.
Wow,
it would
that
be
is
this song.
Thank you very much. I'm a huge fan of the Cranberries, so I was
that.
kind of wanted to dial that in a little bit, this song, and then the whole EP, honestly. But yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. So, did you always want to be a musician?
Well, no, I mean, I've always been around the music community. My dad, like I said, my dad's a musician. I kind of grew up around that. He had a studio at his house. I was always around musicians going in and out. I would go on gear runs with my dad. So it kind of like I started singing at a very young age, started like writing little things at a very young age, and was always a little bit of a performer. So I think it was kind of always in the background as like kind of pushing me to do it. But like I was always like, you know, I don't know if I want to do that. And when I was in school, I played volleyball and was like a like constant volleyball all day, every day, going to games at school, practice. I played travel outside of school, and I was actually going to play in college, and then it got completely messed up during the pandemic. And that's when I was just like, I have all these songs that I've kind of written in my voice notes on my phone. And I brought them over to the studio and was like, I have a whole album worth of songs. What, and I'm bored and it's the pandemic and I don't even know when, what society is going to be like. So let's just kind of go full force into it and make a record. And my dad was like, what? Like he had no idea. He was like, I didn't know you were making, like you had any of these things going on your phone. And I was like, I mean, let's just do it. So, and then I kind of, from that point on, like all these things just started happening. And I was like, oh, I really like this. Like, I really feel like I've kind of, like, this is me finally going into being a musician was like me accepting like, oh, who I really truly am and what I really truly was, you know, born to do. And yeah, so it's been a whirlwind, but we got here. So
Of the songs that you've written, do you have a favorite?
I have two songs on this new EP that I really feel like were kind of turning points in the sound that we were going for, that like I was like, oh, I want to write more stuff like this. And I really feel like this is authentic to who I am as an artist. The first one was Blockbuster. I wrote that in 2021 with a guy named Chris Coip. And that was quite literally about, I had this like moment while I was driving my at the time she was probably like, I don't know, 12, my 12-year-old sister, 13-year-old sister, by this building that was used to be the old Blockbuster that I would go and get movies from every Saturday with my stepdad or my mom or my dad. And I was like, oh, that was an old Blockbuster. And she was like, what's that? And
Oh.
that hurt my soul. And I just was like, oh, you know, like we would go there and rent movies. And she's like Amazon Prime. And I wrote the song Blockbuster quite literally about Blockbuster video stores and made it this really sad, romantic kind of heartbreaking song with these droning bass. Like it was just, you know, I mean, it was an experimental kind of sound. We did French horns at the end. There's like a huge instrumental section where I actually hummed a melody in and we turned it into a French horn sound. So it was like one of my most experimental songs on the EP and then and in general. And I was like, I think that this is like the true essence of what my music is. It's like, I mean, it's literally about a Blockbuster video store, but it's this heartbreaking love song. And the other song that I also really love is What's Not to Love. I feel like that was kind of like we went and I also wrote that with Chris Coip. And melodically, it was very 50s. I grew up on Roy Orbison and Connie Francis, and my grandma and my grandpa kind of raised me a lot when I was a kid. So they played a lot of that for me. And the melody was very 50s, but the production was very 90s and kind of, but also still synthy, a little Fountains of Wayne here and there. And it turned into this like really dramatic, like pessimistic, you know, song. And I feel like that also, like those two songs, Blockbuster and What's Not to Love, really, like, I feel like if you were to introduce me as an artist to anybody, I would say like, okay, play them these two songs, because they're both very different, but they all kind of coincide with each other. But they're so much fun to write and make. And yeah, I like those two. Those are my favorite.
So we're in this landscape where it feels like that anybody with like a smartphone or an internet connection can put out music. What sets Ryan Wright apart from everybody else?
Oh man. I think I like to mix up, like I make things very weird. Like whenever I go into the studio, I'm always like, I want it to sound weird. I want it to sound like Roy Orbison or the meets the Cars, but like weirder. And I think, I mean, I'm not afraid to push the boundaries and, like, I mean, do stuff that doesn't sound sonically right and then jack it up in the studio and make it sound sonically right. Like, I like the challenge. And I think it's very of a specific, like right now what I'm making is very of a specific moment in my life that I feel like everybody kind of goes through at one point or another. And it's not really talked about, like the quarter life crisis kind of concept. I mean, you're always talking about a midlife crisis. Everybody's hearing about that. But like being in your 20s or your late teens or your late teens through your mid to late 20s is like the most confusing and weird time ever. And I think my stuff is just, I mean, it embraces the weird. Like it embraces the odd, you know, feelings and uncomfortable feelings that people don't like talking about or feeling in general. And it turns it into this musical, sonically enjoyable thing. So yeah, I'd say that.
Like that. We need more weirdos in pop music, I feel
we
like.
We do. I mean, I feel like right now we're at a really cool place in pop. Like we have Chappell Roan, we have Sabrina Carpenter, Charlie XCX just dropped Brat, and that was like, I was like, oh my God, this is so good. It's just so different and so, I mean, but like everything is so, it's so pop. And I feel like we went through this time where pop was just kind of hard to love recently, but like these pop queens, like Chappell Roan, Sabrina Carpenter, and Charlie XCX are really making it so much more enjoyable now. I mean, like I've been kind of down my grunge route right now, but I'm like, I kind of want to do some like Chappell Roan-y stuff. Like I really, like I used to write a lot of pop music. I was very indie pop and dream pop towards the beginning of my career. So I was like, oh, I want to get back into that. Like it's really inspiring. It's an inspiring time for music. So
I do like that we've gotten into this era of pop music where it's very unapologetic again.
Yeah.
And we needed that.
Right. Like it's very authentic. It has its own, like each artist has their own sound now. And it's, I mean, like Taylor Swift, like I don't even want to get into it because it's so, I could talk about it for hours on end, but it just like, it brings feeling back in, like they breathe life back into the pop world. And I mean, I'm such a huge fan of what's been out right now. And I mean, I love that it's authentic now and it feels like everybody can kind of like it feels personal to people.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So from going from the days of volleyball games with the songs on voice notes to now, how has your creative process changed?
Oh my goodness. I've done a lot more co-writing. I feel like I've kind of I wanted to mix it up a little bit. And from the beginning, I mean, in the beginning, I would write a song, have it on my phone for like, it would be like 70% of the way done. And then I'd bring it into the studio and be like, okay, let's finish this. And then I would produce it in the studio with my dad, finish up like making it sound a little bit better if there were some lines that I could fix and tweak here and there. And now I'm kind of like on my co-writing, collaborating thing. I'm doing it with a lot of my friends. My best friend, Davis Gastier, who is my guitarist in my band. I write a lot with him. He's also an incredible artist himself. He's kind of pushed me into a different direction sonically. He's very influenced by The Strokes and The Cure and The Smiths. And he plays a lot of his songs in drop D, which is a different tuning. And I don't know how to play in it, and he does. So I get on the phone with him and I'm like, do you have any like chords that are like any kind of little melodies that you're playing on the guitar that I can kind of top line write over and we can make a song out of? And we did, I wrote Bleed with him, and I wrote a bunch of his stuff with him. Like it's fun to write with people that you're also really good friends with. And like, I wrote Quarter Life Crisis with my friend, Ben Skopoulos, who is also my tour manager. So we kind of keep it like in the family. They both have very different musical backgrounds and styles and likes, dislikes. And like, I like that challenge of kind of marrying our styles together. And it's also just a fun hang. It's so much fun. But definitely, I would say it's become more of like a collaborative process. It's cool to kind of bring in the people that you love around you and on the project and make something. Get creative.
Which Disney princess do you most identify with?
Oh my God. When I was little, my favorite princess was Cinderella. And I don't really identify with Cinderella now, like if I really think about it, but she was my favorite. And she had a dog named Bruno, and that's actually what we named like my first puppy dog ever. My dad got a wiener dog when I was 3, and he was like this just sweet little thing. And we were like, what do we name him? And my mom was like, you should name him Bruno, because Bruno is your favorite princess's dog. So, you know, I at that age, I would say Cinderella. I guess now I kind of feel like I'm like going through the list of all the Disney princesses. I'm at a confusing time in my life. I would say like Rapunzel. I feel like she's kind of like experiencing some new things in the movie Tangled. And she's very like energetic, but also like dealing with these like conflicting feelings. So I'd say I feel a little bit like Rapunzel right now.
I like it.
If you could go back in time to the minute that you took your songs into the studio and start your career over, would you do anything differently?
Oh man, I would probably be like, I guess my biggest struggle towards the beginning of it was the whole image, because I had the sound there and the concept and everything, but I couldn't artistically show it when I would talk to people in the industry, they would be like, what's your story? What's your narrative? Like, what is the thing that we're trying to see? Like, what is Ryan Wright? And I didn't really have that completely developed yet. And that was a big struggle. And it took a long time and a lot of trial and error to see what worked and what I really felt like was my true self. And then I guess I didn't really find it until the past couple of years and within the last 2 EPs. And I guess I would say like, I would probably go back in time, and as stupid as it sounds, I would take myself shopping because the style at the time, I mean, it was COVID. We were all wearing sweatpants and just like not putting any effort into it. And even at that age, I mean, I was very into sports. I basically like, I never, ever went out of the box, and I wanted to so bad. I feel like I was very, was a little insecure at that age. I grew up at a school that was very, it wasn't super diverse. It was in kind of this part of the world that's, you know, very narrow-minded, and like they would make fun of me for wearing my platform Doc Martens, because I'm already very tall. I'm like 5'10 and a half. And wow. The half is important. And I would wear these platform Docs to school. I wore them once because I was so excited that I got them. And I was like, these like feel like me. Like these feel like what I really want to be as me. And I wore them once and people were like, you look goth and scary and I don't like it. And now I'm like, if someone told me I looked goth and scary, I'd be like, thank you. So probably I would give my, I would go back in time, take myself shopping, and then give myself a little bit of a pep talk and be like, hey, like, it's going to be okay. Just quite literally be yourself and it'll be all right. Don't worry about what everybody else is thinking.
Stick around for more of the Mixtape Lounge right after this.
From the minds that brought you the smash hit podcasts, Your Life the Mixtape, and Headliners comes Your Life the Mixtape Magazine, a free monthly digital magazine that focuses on music, culture, and social commentary on current news and events. Visit www.yourlifethemixtape.com to subscribe today.
Hello there, I want to take a moment to talk to you about Dear Dean magazine from Dear Dean Publishing, my favorite subscription only monthly digital magazine. It's got subscriber generated content about politics, pop culture, travel, family, pets, and poetry and wellness articles and features, contributor articles from nationally recognized journalists, writers, and artists, and provides opportunities for novice writers and authors and other contributors to share their voice, talents, and words. Did I mention that it's completely free? Dear Dean magazine provides free advert space for small creators, authors, and podcasters, fulfilling its vision that some art should always be free. It's owned and operated by Myron J. Clifton and is designed and distributed by Katya J. Lerner at Buzzword Consulting. Visit deardean.com/subscribe to get signed up.
Hey Suge, I am the one and only Jennifer Bush Harris, known in other parts of the multiverse as What Jay Said. From the planet of TikTok comes What Jay Said, the podcast. Find me on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I am a match struck and fire is at work.
how do you balance artistic expression with commercial appeal when you're writing songs?
Oh man, I don't necessarily think of like the commercial appeal part really until we get into the production phase of it. So like when I'm writing the song, I kind of am just like word vomiting everything that I'm feeling. And sometimes it takes an hour, sometimes it takes 20 minutes to get it all out. And like sometimes it takes 2 days and like we don't have a song and that's fine, but it's just like a therapy session. And like once we get past that stage and we have the song, we'll like voice memo it on with playing it on guitar or piano or something. And that's when we just kind of go into the studio and I'm like, okay, this is the music that I'm really into right now. Sonically, like, I feel like this would be cool if we made it sound like this. I feel like the tours that we've been on and the fans would really like this. And that's kind of, I guess, where we go from the personal kind of therapy session writing, separating that from the commercialization, like making it, you know, sound good to people. But yeah, the writing part is like, I try to keep that as personal as possible. I'm like, okay, here's all my feelings. I may sound crazy. You all may want to be like, do you need to be checked in somewhere? But then it's okay. Then we make it into a song and we're all like, oh, relief. It is kind of like a therapeutical thing. Like, I guess music, as cheesy as it sounds, music is medicine. Like, I feel kind of like I get all my feelings out and then I get to turn it into art. Like, you make something that feels ugly, cool and pretty and, I mean, sound good. So, I think. But, yeah.
What would you say is the coolest thing about being a musician?
Oh, man. I mean, I would say like performing all of this stuff live has been a new thing that I've kind of explored in the past year. Like, I've done a few shows and I've done, I think, 4 tours. I'm getting ready to do another one. This might be my 4th or this might be my 5th. I can't remember. I'm doing one this September on the West Coast, which I've never done before. And I'm going to a lot of new places that I've never been before. And it's really fun to see. And well, I guess like this past weekend, I had a show for the EP release where I sang all the songs plus a ton of other songs. And I threw my own show and there were a bunch of people that showed up, people that were like friends and family, people that I didn't even know. And I guess that's the best part of it is like people that kind of like you get to see how your music translates to people. And seeing like people like know every song word for word, like they stayed up at midnight and like learned every song for it. And people that came from previous tours that I was on that like traveled from different parts of the US. And like that's very cool to me, is seeing how it reaches people. And like the indie music community specifically is, I mean, my music is indie. I really like the relationships that you make with the fans. Like it feels like you have a true connection to them. Like they actually take the time to come up and get to know you and meet you after the show and get their t-shirts signed. And that's what's so cool, is seeing how it all translates to people. I think that's my favorite part.
How do you maintain authenticity in what is very often a superficial and image-driven industry?
Oh man, I feel like I've been raised with a bunch of very grounded people, and my family are very wonderful. They have like all of them have good heads on their shoulders. And I feel like being surrounded by people that are just good and feel good. Like I'm very kind of like empathetic in that way, where I can tell when the vibes are off and when the vibes are right. And I mean, I think surrounding myself with just good-hearted people in the industry and outside of the industry it's helped me kind of stay okay throughout the whole process, like kind of be like, kind of stay grounded through it all and keep doing what I know is right and what I feel is right for my sound and for my artistry and my image. And I mean, towards the beginning of the whole thing, at the beginning of the pandemic, I had a couple of experiences that were like my first taste of, and it was my first experiences in this, in the industry, that were kind of a little shady and a little off-putting. And I remember, like, it was easy to be kind of blinded by how cool it all sounded and how like amazing it all sounded on paper. And then when you kind of start to like read between the lines, you're like, oh, I need to take a step back from this. Like, this is not, it's not right. So definitely being around good people. I've built a really good team of people behind me. My label is awesome. My manager is awesome. Everybody that I have like kind of supporting me and working with me are just like the coolest, nicest, supportive people, and are incredibly important to me and the project. And yeah, being around good people.
Love it. Of all the songs that you have released up until this point, which one do you feel like deserves a Grammy?
Oh man, I don't know. this is such a hard question. I guess I have also, sorry if my dog is making sounds. He just jumped on my bed. He's like, I want to be in here too.
I can't even hear him.
Okay, good, because he's like chewing my bed, sir. I would say, I mean, You Were Never Mine was kind of the first thing that we really had like a ton of traction on. And it was in a show called Ginny in Georgia, and it seems to be like my most listened to song to this date. I feel like commercially, I would say You Were Never Mine, but like something that would, I guess, what I would want to win a Grammy for, and is still one of my most favorite songs to this date, besides like What's Not to Love in Blockbuster, but it's just like it's so much fun to perform. It kind of feels very organic and different to everything that I've put out, is I Am in Love with a Boy Who Cheats. And that was on my third EP, second EP. I have how many EPs I have? Yeah, three. Second EP. I'd say that one. That one, it doesn't get as much love as I would like it to, but it has a special place in my heart, and it deserves a Grammy in my brain.
If the producers of a James Bond film came to you and said, Ryan, we need a theme for the new film right now, which of your songs do you give them?
My gosh. This is so, I'm gonna have to like pull up the track list on my EPs. I feel like What's Not to Love, but I feel like if we stripped it down and kind of jacked it up in a different, like in the studio, and made it kind of Bondy, like we could do it, because the chords are very like dramatic and there's a key change and it's very like 50s, and I feel like we could add some strings and we could make it kind of haunting and spooky and very Bondy, and you know, yeah, What's Not to Love.
Do you consider yourself an artist or an entertainer?
Oh man, an artist. I think personally, like if you knew me, you'd be like, oh, she's an entertainer. But because I feel like I have such a weird big personality, but I think an artist. I definitely still struggle with like going on stage and really showing everybody like, oh, this is me. It took a long time for me to get used to it, and it still is. I still feel like I'm evolving and figuring that side of me out. The artistry part is so much easier for me. It comes like, it comes naturally. I feel very comfortable with it. I'd say an artist.
Is there a song that changed your life?
Like something that's not my own, I think the turning point for me where I realized indie music was a thing and like had a like my first visceral reaction to a song, because I can remember the exact setting that I was in when I first heard it, and I was in the back, and my aunt still has this car to this day and it still works. I was probably 4 years old, 3 or 4 years old, sitting in the back of my aunt's silver Acura, and she was playing Hot Fuss by the Killers, and Smile Like You Mean It started playing, and I just had this like visceral reaction to it where I was like what is this, like, and I mean I was a little kid, but I would come home after hanging out with her. I was kind of raised by like all of my mom's family, like they all pitched in, and I was also raised by my mom too. I don't want to give her no credit, but like I would go home and sing these lyrics of these songs, and my mom would be like, what did you just say? I remember my mom getting mad at me for singing Mr. Brightside during the bridge route, and she's touching his chest now, he takes off her dress now, and my mom was like, you what? Like, huh? Who taught you this? But since then, I've gotten to see the Killers. They still remain my favorite band of all time. I have a tattoo of one of their albums on my arm. And I've gotten to see them live so many times. And but I would say Smile Like You Mean It was like life-changing for me.
Are you the artist that you thought you'd be when you started out?
Oh, no. I can say that with confidence. I was very dream poppy, and probably at the time, like if Chapel Roan was a huge thing at that time, I would probably want to be like Chapel Roan or like Charlie XCX and be a pop girl. And now I'm kind of like, oh, I want to be like Veruca Salt and Liz Phair, and I want to do something that's more like different and unsettling and kind of uncomfortable, but like still feels right, you know? But yeah, at the time I was like, I'm going to be a pop icon. That's what I want to be. And now I'm like, I don't want to be a pop icon. Like if I'm like an underground artist, that is like my goal. I want to be like underground enough that people know about it, but that not all people know about it. Something like that.
So tell the folks listening at home and all over the world where they can get their hands on your music.
Oh man, everywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube. My TikTok is It's Cryin' Ryan. And my Instagram is at Ryan Wright Music. It's kind of all over the place. You can also see it live in September on the West Coast. There are tickets in the link of my Instagram bio. And yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk to me about you and the music. And I have enjoyed this so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun. I love this kind of thing. I love meeting new people and, you know, just talking about the music.
The Mixtape Lounge is a Your Life. The Mixtape Media, LLC production in association with Rod Wharton Productions. All rights and trademarks reserved.